Hey everybody, and welcome to The Pull, the show where we talk about the comics that came out each week. This week, we're gonna have a lot more Joel talking, because I'm not feeling the best that I could be. So, we wanted to do the show, because we will not be here next week. And, so I wanted to make sure we had a show this week anyway. So, yeah, let's get this going, and we'll start off this week with Action Comics.
Yes.
You want to talk? I read that too, but I'm going to let you take point and I'll jump in as needed.
Okay. So this is the second part of kind of the two-issue little filler arc. Not really filler. That's, you know, to say that it didn't live up. There was actually quite a few seeds planted in it. In the previous issue, we saw Lex and Superman have to team up to fight the Machinist, who is, you know, causing civil wars all over the world with his crazy chips.
Yeah.
And Lex got one put in him, because of course he did, which means we get what we haven't had in a very long time in the DC Rebirth era, and that is a Lex Superman dust-em-up.
Yep. Yeah, very classic punch-em-up kind of.
Oh, yeah. did it feel like this to you? It felt like they also started to kind of like make stuff up about like Lex's apocalyptic battle armor, where it's like, oh no, not only does it allow him to fly and give him all this super strength and everything, but he's only been using half of its power. If he uses all of it, he starts to look like Darkseid.
Yeah, and only like for a temporary amount of time, which is like, I don't know if it's just something they're like establishing now so that they're like, we'll use that later, maybe.
Does it also make him, like, big, or did the art just suck in this book and the perspective was off? I couldn't tell.
I don't know. I mean, like, in theory, it should make him big because Darkseid is, of course, larger than life. But he's also, I don't know. It could have either honestly been either, which is never a good sign for art.
I was trying really hard when you said Darkseid is larger than life. I had to suck it back in where I'm like, he's larger than anti-life. Ah!
Too true. Then.
I'm a bastard. This issue was like really quite speedy. You know, Superman dealt with Lex. The little wrinkle they put in this is that the Mechanist chip doesn't really make you evil. It just brings out what was inside you all along. So when Lex was talking mad trash about Superman, apparently that's still how he feels on the inside.
Right. Exactly. It's just brings out those inner demons, all those thoughts you don't want people to know about. But, I mean, I think everybody kind of
So the
knew.
Chip is like booze is what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Mechanist got Lex nice and liquored up. He's like, I'm going to tell you what I think about you, Superman. You make me feel inadequate still.
Exactly.
The Mechanist is ultimately defeated really early.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, obviously they, like you said, like, this was really just like a, like, hey, let's get from point A to point B. Maybe we'll establish something for the future. But the fact is, this is not really what this is about anyway. But, like, No. Let's watch Superman punch things and, like, let's watch Lex Luthor and he fight.
It was perfectly serviceable on that regard. I enjoyed it for what it did. And, of course, the big stinger of this issue was setting stuff up for the identity of Oz. We see Mr. Oz come to Lex because Oz hired the Machinist. That's true, actually, when he first appeared. He hired him. He was working for him. And Mr. Oz ends up blasting Lex with some very Kryptonian-looking heat vision.
That's right. Absolutely.
Is Oz a Kryptonian?
To avoid the letter Z, well, at least that mark, which I took personal offense to. Let's not pretend I didn't.
Hey, that's one of my initials, you jerk.
Exactly. Back off.
Give it back. Give it back my Z, damn it. There's been a lot of interesting theories floating around about Mr. Oz. One of the more interesting ones my buddy Matt was telling me about, that it might be Jor-El. Or like some leftover bit of Jor-El, because he clearly knows a lot about Superman and Kryptonian technology. He's got the heat vision that is oh so classic with it, and apparently in some of the art too, where we see him with the hood off in silhouette, he's got like a little wraparound in the back of his head, very reminiscent of what New 52 Jor-El had. Wouldn't that be some crazy stuff if Oz was Jor-El?
I mean, that would be like, it's interesting how both Batman and Superman may, or at least with Superman now, dealing with their fathers.
Yeah.
Dealing with a missing, like, parent in that sense. So that would be interesting to see what they do with it, especially questioning what his motives are. Just in
How he
general.
survived the destruction of Krypton, another.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've always thought of Jor-El as this like interesting mentor character, like this guy who was, clearly had a very different like fundamental idea of how to help Krypton and just, like kind of, self-sacrificing. And then to turn him into this, it'll be interesting to see how they kind of just come to terms with that. Like, how do we get to this point?
Maybe he's still being self-sacrificing because we see Mr. Oz is clearly preparing for something. Probably the Watchmen, probably Dr. Manhattan. Wouldn't it be something if Oz does turn out to be Jor-El and Jor-El's thing is like, no more Kryptons, no more destroyed planets for me and my son. I'm going to save Earth the way I could never have saved Krypton, and I'm going to do it by getting brutal and getting proactive.
That could easily be, but still, I mean, I don't know. Like, that's not a reckoning I wanna see, especially when, like, I don't know, anyone else who's been affected by this gets a hold of him.
Yeah, that's also true.
Like, I don't, I feel like Batman's not gonna be one too happy.
No. And Superman will be like, don't kill my dad, Batman. Come on, but he kidnapped my son.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
It's really messed me up in my own book.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing all sorts of crazy things. And also, metal is happening somewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot. Batman's dealing with a lot right now.
He's a busy fellow, man. And I got engaged in there somewhere too. I gotta plan a wedding, man. I am
Oh,
stressed.
he's got Alfred for that. Alfred had a binder. He just dusted it off. He's like, I never thought I'd get to pull this out.
In case of wedding break glass.
Exactly. Real quick, I just want to say thank you so much, Mr. Giggles, for your super chat. He said, "Hey guys, glad you're on," and there's applause and some fire there. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Again, like I said, like, I definitely just wanted to make sure we had this show since I knew we were taking next week off. I felt weird about us taking 2 weeks back to back without telling anybody. So yeah, on with the show. So I
Heart
mean,
pump.
overall, this was fine for me.
Yeah.
Like, it usually with these things, it's like you kind of feel like it's a kind of in between thing. This like was like hitting you over the head. With how much of an in-between thing it was. So, and I'm being given something right now.
Aw. Here, take a cat.
Take a cat.
Everybody gets a cat. Look under
Everybody
your
gets
seat.
a cat. So, all right. Well, whilst I take care of this little Chevy thing, why don't we now talk about Detective Comics while we're in that realm,
Sure.
essentially?
This very similarly to action is also in the middle of a arc before stuff gets serious. In this case, it's the quest for Tim Drake. But until we get there, we gotta have a story about Stephanie Brown, spoiler, and Anarchy.
Okay.
But not just any version of Anarchy, the Lonnie Mackin version of Anarchy, who is like the boy genius original version, who is not a boy anymore. He's about the same age as Tiffin Tim was, which is interesting. Because back in the day, they actually originally wanted Anarchy Lonnie to become the third Robin. It was Marv Wolfman who stepped in and said, no, I got this character called Tim. You're going to love him. And indeed, we did.
Right. So, all right, have we seen spoilers since that last like random mini thing
Nope,
in
this is the first
Detective?
time we're seeing her.
And again, like in something that's like sort of an in-between thing.
Yep,
Okay.
spoiler has the in-betweens by the looks of it.
All
And,
right.
It's funny, I mentioned the history between Anarchy and Tim because they really seem to be setting up Anarchy as like Stephanie Brown's shitty rebound boyfriend. Girl, you ain't nothing without me. You ain't shit without me. You without me equals shit. Now give me the keys to your car. That's the kind of bad boyfriend he is. Actually, he's not. He's like, I have big plans that don't involve Batman. He hurts more people than he does, and I'm all about personal freedoms and, breaking down, the order as it is. Basically the textbook definition of anarchy.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
He even makes a joke in this issue about how, people are always getting anarchy wrong. It's not about chaos or everything. Like, he literally like reads from the anarchist like handbook. This is what it actually means, and
So
this is what I'm actually
aptly
thinking.
name like one of those where he's just like, no, this is it. Like, get it. Like, I didn't just pick this name out of a hat or because it like sounded cool. Like,
But it does look cool. Have you
yeah,
seen
well,
this?
they
Red
got
and
that
gold,
going.
man, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so that's the A story. The B story I was actually a lot more interested in, and that is Clayface is helping Dr. November, their mad scientist buddy, round up a bunch of test subjects from Monster Town.
Okay, I gotta tell you, I think I loved everything about that sentence. Before we go into it, I want to say thank you again to Mr. Giggles for another lovely super chat. Thank you so much. It says extra for next week. Next week is going to suck. And then he makes a
Oh.
sad face. I know, it's gonna be weird. I'm not gonna know what to do with myself.
We'll be working on stuff, I'm sure. We'll come back stronger for it.
Exactly. That's precisely it. But no, I honestly loved that sentence. First of all, Clayface, yay. Mad scientist friend. Props there. Always should have one
Always.
of those. Test subjects for Monster Town. Yeah.
It's a lot of good
That
words,
was
and
a
the thing.
really good sentence. That almost makes up for Kang Time Baby, but not really.
I'll be sure to keep that one in my back pocket just for later. What's interesting too is that Dr. November, who is becoming a hell of a character in this book now, in exchange for helping her wrangle some test subjects, she's like helping Basil Carlo come to terms with his monster form. And that is, they're building in this idea now that the longer Basil Carlo is crazy monster Clayface,
Okay.
the more it causes his brain to degrade, he loses his reasoning skills and becomes a villain again, essentially. And they're like, we want to run some tests on you in monster form so we can maybe find a way to counteract this so you can have the full breadth of your Clayface powers while still being a good guy.
Okay.
It's pretty cool, and at the same time too, Batman's like, you've come so far, Basil. I really respect the work you're putting in for me and the team, but if you go bad again, I swear to Christ, I'll fucking end you. And then we have a whole scene of Batman looking at this like wall full of like sci-fi laser guns, like, oh, I'm gonna shoot you with that, I'm gonna shoot you with that.
Okay.
Don't mess with Batman.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, like, that's never really been something on my bucket list, like messing with Batman, so this just kind of
Don't do
supports my feelings about that. So yeah.
this. This was another okay issue. We find out Anarchy's big grand plan. You're like, oh, is he gonna poison the river? Is he gonna do something? No,
Right.
his plan is he set up an experimental commune underground in Monster Town where people can live with radical freedoms and everything. I'm like, really? This was your big plan? There's got to be something sinister going on here, right? Because that doesn't strike me as sinister. I've started a hippie commune.
Right? Yeah, like, no, I just want everybody else to have like a nice time and do what they please. It's totally cool, whatever. Don't worry about it.
We're gonna kick around the hacky sack later.
Right? And you're like, and also you're kicking children or something? Is that part of...
He
No?
makes a big point of setting it up in Monster Town, being like, no, if I can save Monster Town with my ideology, then clearly it'll spread to the rest of the city and people will see I'm right and Batman is wrong. And I'm like, it's an interesting pitch. I mean, I've heard worse pitches.
Okay.
All right.
Sure, why not? Like, that
We'll go
works for
for
me, I guess. So.
it. It just seems so funny because I kept waiting for like the dun 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 reveal he's actually doing bad stuff. Nah, not really. Not yet anyway. I mean, yeah, in the second issue we can find out like, oh, and I'm funding this with drug money or
Right,
something.
exactly. Some sort of like illegal element has to happen, I suppose, or not.
The worst
Different.
thing Anarchy did in this issue is he got a little overzealous in beating up like some Argus rent-a-cops was the worst thing.
That's it?
That was the worst thing he did. He got a little overzealous and he's like, screw you, man, screw you pigs of the industrial war machine and stuff. And I'm like, okay.
You're like, right on. What?
It reminded me very much. Judd Winnick actually used Anarchy a lot during his Green Arrow run because it's like, Anarchy, I'm just a more extreme version of you, Green Arrow. I just take your ideology a couple notches higher. And I'm like, man, I would have loved Oliver Queen to hop in on this one and be like, look, 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 sure, they might be tools of the man, but that doesn't
Right.
mean you get to brutalize a man.
Exactly.
Like, look, I'm halfway there with you, man, but only half.
Right. Absolutely. So, all right, overall, I mean, like, lately, like, you have not been like super enthusiastic about Detective.
I think because they're building up to the Tim Drake thing is what it
Okay.
is, and they're all a little slow. I think this is the calm before the storm is what
Okay.
this is.
That's fair. All right. Well, there you go. So you recommend Detective or
If you've been liking it, I think you'll like this one too. But keep in mind, much like Action from this week, it will not blow your socks off. It
Right.
has done better.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's just funny because in both the because you got Action and Superman and Detective and Batman and both of them right now, like, kind of more interesting things are occurring, whether that be the War of Jokes and Riddles or, you know, Superman being infected by Parallax. It's just funny. I'm wondering if they're just going to kind of take turns, you know.
They seem to go back and forth. They kind of seem to have a bit of a roller coaster thing. Like, you get the big one this month, and we'll take the smaller, more personal story this month.
Exactly. All right, guys. So let's take a little journey over into Marvel for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try, because I know I read it, to recap for you what happened in Venomverse number 5, or the Edge of Venomverse.
People were asking about this on Twitter. They were stoked to hear about Venomverse.
So, you know, this is one of those things where this was just a really random thing that I embarked upon, because, like, I've never been a huge, like, Venom fan. Not like I didn't like him, but it just was never just like, and now I will read Venom books. It was just kind of like, okay, cool, Venom exists, and that's neat. So I thought I would give these a try, and, like, so far I really enjoyed them. You know, it's just about characters kind of becoming part of this upcoming Venomverse event that's going to be going on, and essentially it'll be joining, or it'll be starting in like 2 weeks or so. We'll actually get the first Venomverse title, but this one, they save the best for last, and they show us Deadpool becoming a symbiote, which has occurred before. Yeah, and trust me, they are very well aware of that, and it is everything that you would imagine it would be. It's over the top. It's ridiculous. At times, it's funny because it seems like it's like almost like mugging for the camera a little bit too much. But then there are like just a lot of amazing moments in it that like just bring it right back. And it's just like often just the right type of humor for me.
Mm-hmm.
In this, Wade is breaking into like a laboratory where like someone's like essentially using like bio elements to create different weapons, and the Pentagon wants them, so they sent him there to get them. They're like, we want this. And it turns out there's like symbiotic like experiments and research going on there, but like we initially don't see Venom necessarily. Like, you kind of see it on the shelf, but like there's a bunch of other symbiotes there, and like they're really gross looking. They look like worms essentially. It's like a combination of like a lot of things you've seen, whether it be like the alien as like it's like, you know, a little infantile version or like just in general from other like scary movies like Tremors or even something like that. Like, it's a culmination of a lot of things I've seen before.
Right.
Even as so much as going to like Resident Evil 4 in a sense. So like people are infected with like these mini worms. I'm sure that they have shown up before. I've never seen them before, but like I thought they were neat because once they get inside the body, Wade attempts to like cut off the limbs and heads of the scientists who are infected, and the worms try desperately to hang on to them and just pull them back down. And they kind of, like, they talk themselves, like, each of the little worms, like, kind of communicates, so, like, that in and of itself is hilarious. And, like, Wade just gets right into it, like, there's no pretenses here, like, he's just like, oh, the Venom symbiote, excellent, and he just busts that thing open.
In here, done this.
Like, it's cool, and then they, for a lot of the book, you know the Sounds of Silence?
Yes.
Yes, the song? Yeah, yes. Imagine most of the, not most of, but much of the issue is sung to that.
It's just people talking without speaking.
Yeah, or it's just Wade making up lyrics to go with the song.
Well, Wade Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, he starts with that, and then we just go on from there, and occasionally we'll go back into that. And even at one point, like, as, like, the fights get more and more ridiculous because, like, Wade's like, all right, I gotta go. Let's go do some heroic things. And they find out that, like, the parasite is attempting to jump from host to host by, like, infecting like doctors and such, who will then implant patients with organs that are essentially like these like symbiote organ things. So like that they're trying to break themselves out that way. So of course Wade shows up, and like an epic battle ensues within a hospital. So you got these like crazy images of like people being infected in various ways, and like it's just, you know, it's very like horror-esque, but done in like the like Deadpool style that was chosen for this book in particular. And at one point, so Wade's infected with, you know, the Venom symbiote, and then that is then covered in the other parasite. So like Wade's just like, he's just like, I feel incredibly violated right now, because it's just they're like everywhere essentially, and
it's in my raccoon wounds.
What?
I was gonna say, it's in my raccoon wounds.
Oh yeah, oh, it goes all kinds of places, and he lets you know about that, most certainly. The places it goes. Oh, the places it will go.
Oh, 10 on 10 for Dr. Seuss.
I'm sorry, Dr. Seuss, I shouldn't have said that. In the end, of course, Deadpool
I think
gets
Deadpool
the.
would appreciate that
Oh,
reference.
he totally would. In the end, he definitely gets the upper hand. He then ends up going about the hospital, doing more heroic acts, like i.e. Delivering babies, entertaining children with the worm parasites by blowing up as balloon animals. And then, much like all the other ones have ended, like a vortex open, but it pulls him directly into this other world where he finds Captain America, Venom, and he's just like, we got a war to win. And that's how it ends. And like at the end of the day, look, like we knew like Venom was gonna be a part of this, and like was this quite as, thrilling or exciting, or like how are they gonna make this work as some of the previous ones? But it was kind of fun and it was entertaining at the very least. And I mean, like when you've had someone like Ven or like Deadpool who's already had the symbiote, there's only so much you can do. You know what I mean? Like it's like, he's already had it, cool, whatever. We're just gonna like, yeah, whatever. We're just gonna do something kind of comical, and they certainly did. Like at the like that for me is really what they wanted to do, is they wanted to do like a funny, entertaining issue that got him to the place he needed to be, and they did. But like for me, like the Wolverine one I think was better, the one that just except for the art, which was not spectacular, but it was more fun. That was it was just a more interesting journey. This was fine, but like I said. Like watching Deadpool try to put lyrics to that song that fit in the moment, that worked for me. That really did. So,
It's a good bit.
yeah. So I'm interested to see where this is going, and to see them all working together. So we'll see how it goes, and hopefully, I don't know. I guess that, like I this was something I randomly jumped into, and now all of a sudden I'm reading Venomverse. So I don't know. We'll see how what happens. But while we hang out here, let's talk about Generations Thor.
Yes.
I did not get the chance to read this week, so that's all you, my friend.
This one is a humdinger. Generations, of course, will be the lead into Legacy. Jason Aaron wrote this, and Jason Aaron is writing Legacy. As it stands right now, yeah, this is a must-read one.
Oh, really?
Yes, he does a thing at the end where it's like, oh yeah, gotta buy this one.
That's awesome.
It's funny, the full title of this is Generations, The Mighty Thor and the Unworthy Thor. To where I'm looking at the cover, I'm like, but wait a minute, this is Thor in his old costume. Clearly he must be worthy at this point in his career. No, actually, because again, this is Jason Aaron working within the framework of his new retcon, and that is that Thor didn't raise the hammer right away. In fact, he tried a lot of his young life to try and pick it up. He'd sneak into his father's, weapons room and try and, get it up, essentially. But he'd always have trouble getting it up, that Thor. And his father would be outside, be like, "What you doing in there, boy? You trying to raise that hammer again? We have company coming."
Right, okay.
I'm half joking. That's literally how it goes. Thor's trying to raise the hammer, and Odin's like, "Nah, come on, put your formal wear on," which is just his original costume.
Right.
The Vanir are coming, and we have to entertain.
Okay, fair
And
enough.
so, yeah, that's the whole setup there. It's great because this is like a snapshot of Asgard. So you see the Enchantress and the Warriors Three and Sif and Valkyrie all in their original forms and original costumes, just hanging out for this big party. And Thor leaves because, A, he's not allowed to drink and he's not allowed to fight at the party. So he's like, "Well, this is lame. Dad's lame."
That seems, okay, I get the picture we're painting for Thor. Got it.
This is teenage Thor. This is like younger Thor, who's, very impetuous and very rebellious. This is the Thor who will need to prove he is worthy because he isn't yet.
Right.
And he gets a prayer from his favorite followers, the Vikings.
Okay.
And Thor's like, "Well, this party sucks, so I'm gonna go see what the Vikings want." Apparently, a bunch of Vikings that worship Thor, they took a wrong turn at Albuquerque while pillaging, and they ended up sailing all the way to Egypt. And they're just hanging out there in the Nile, and they're like, "Oh crap, we're lost. Thor, come and help
They're like, we're
us."
lost and we're warm. We're really warm. It's not this warm where we live, and we don't know what to do.
It's not good. It's not great. They worship their own gods here. And hey, one of the gods they worship, they apparently picked the worst time to show up in Egypt because this is Egypt during the reign of En-Sabanur Apocalypse.
Oh. Well.
Yeah, not a great time to show up. And Apocalypse is like, "Get off of my yard, you damn Vikings."
Fair enough. Okay.
And it's funny, when Thor shows up, he's like, "Oh, you." Because here's the thing, back in what was it, Uncanny Avengers under, oh God, who the hell wrote that? The X-Force guy. Oh, why is his name escaping me? back during like the original Marvel Now Uncanny Avengers, they did a whole story wherein a young Thor, before he raised the hammer, met Apocalypse, mm-hmm. and Apocalypse beat the crap out of him, but Thor managed to get a good one in on him with his axe, Yabberjorn. And because of that, that's why the axe was powerful, and that's why the axe helped them defeat the Apocalypse twins. That's an old story. That's a while ago now. Okay. But Thor's like, aw, sweet rematch against this guy. Can't wait. And then out of nowhere, literally in a bolt from the blue, Jane Foster gets transported there.
Okay.
And she's like, ah, crap, what am I doing here? One second I was with the Avengers, now I'm in ancient Egypt in the middle of a Viking Apocalypse street fight.
Gotcha. Okay.
Not a great time. And Thor sees her right away and sees that she's holding the hammer. And the thing that he jumps to is, oh, did Father send you to torment me, to make fun of me for my inability to raise the hammer? What kind of witchy sorcery is this? And she's basically like, oh, God, I'm in the past, aren't I? She thinks this to herself. And she's like, look, dude, I hold the hammer because I'm worthy. You'll be worthy one day, too, but let's not make a whole thing out of this, okay?
Right. All right.
They then decide to team up. They take the fight to Apocalypse. They have cool apocalyptic battles with, you know, lots of great imagery, lots of lightning. And they end up sailing away together. And the thing is, you know, like, every character so far has learned a lesson from their older counterpart or from their younger counterpart. This one is kind of Jane learning to a different view of godhood and a different view of humanity.
Okay.
And being like, you know, wow, you know, Thor dropped everything he was doing to go help these Vikings, and they love him for it, and he loves them, and his dad keeps trying to pull him away from Earth. I've maybe got a little lost in my own godhood and, you know, running away from my cancer and everything. You know, maybe if I live, I should try and reconnect with humanity.
Okay.
And everything, like the Thor before. I mean, that's kind of the message of the thing, where it's like, you know, it wasn't his godliness that made Thor worthy. It was his connection to mankind and him being like a good protector god and everything that made him special. And they kind of have like a nice little heart to heart. Then she disappears. But that's not the end of the story, though.
Okay. Hang on.
So
before you get to the big spoiler, so they don't worry, or she does not worry at all about changing time, like, the timeline at all? Like, I will help you fight Apocalypse.
Well, again, I think they just, like, defeat him that day. They don't, like, kill him or anything. It's okay. Kind of like, you know, oh, the Vikings got what they came for. Okay, let's bounce now.
Right, okay. So it's not like it's like, and then, like, that gave way to, like, the uprising that would eventually, you know, topple him? No.
They didn't kill him or anything. They just popped in for a spell, beat him up. And again, like, here's the thing. Thor Odinson doesn't actually believe that Jane is what she claims to be, where it's like, oh, well, clearly you're some manner of shapeshifter, or clearly you're some sort of optical illusion from Loki to mess with me or something.
Okay.
Surely no common wench could raise the hammer, hardy har har, I'm still very immature, hardy har har.
Yeah, okay.
They get some good jokes at his expense for that one. But the big thing at the end here is to check on in with Odin to see what he's been doing. And apparently he too snuck away from the party to see an old girlfriend. And guess who this old girlfriend is?
Wait, hang on. First of all, is he married at this point?
He has a couple wives, he said, but they're cool. They're in a very open Asgardian relationship. It's fine.
Do they know that, or?
I don't think Odin told them. Let's face it, with everything we know about Odin, I don't think he told them.
Yeah, right. They don't know they're in an open relationship. All right, mm-mm. Now who is it?
It's the Phoenix.
As who?
At the Phoenix Force, as like the embodiment of fire that takes the form of a sexy lady made of fire. Because here's the thing. Odin's like, man, you know, this king thing, you know, I took over from my dad. He was a cruel tyrant and everything. But I swear to God, my greatest battle is not with frost giants or, you know, fire trolls. It's with my own damn kids, man. I swear, you know, fatherhood, it's a rough gig. It was so much easier when you and I were together back in the day. And the Phoenix is like, oh, yeah, we did have good times, didn't we? But, you know, you could never tame me because I'm literally the fiery heat of the universe. And he's like, yeah, but making love to fire was awesome. Because
okay.
Here's the connection, because Jason Aaron will be writing the Legacy one-shot of the Avengers BC,
yep,
wherein Odin holding the hammer is a member, and the OG Phoenix is a member.
Right, so he's
so they
up
had a yeah
this really rocky, crazy relationship.
Yeah, so before what? Christ, these two were an item. Back when he had both eyes, back when he was Odin Two Eyes. Yeah, I know, right? Pretty insane, right? And Jason Aaron's like, he's like, oh, I bet you want to see how this happened, right? Well, you better pick up Marvel Legacy.
I guess I'm kind of more interested in how that works, but yeah, okay. we could just say I want to see how that happened.
Odin's basically like, don't think about it. It's awesome.
I feel like you can't help but think about it. I gotta tell you.
I banged the fiery heat of the universe. What did you do today?
Not that. That's for sure. I'll tell you that right now. Did not. Wow.
It's, okay. It's also kind of interesting, too, because Jason Aaron, in one of his last runs, we saw Thor fight the Phoenix Force, and the Phoenix Force has a real narc on for Mjolnir the Hammer and the sentient storm that's inside. And I'm like, oh, is this why? Is this like a jilted lover thing they have going on? Does she hate the hammer because it's an extension of Odin? Is that why?
Okay, let me tell you something right now. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like this is the last thing anyone needs, is for the Phoenix to be like in a soap opera relationship with this arm of the Marvel Universe.
Well, it's like they're not together anymore. It was back then, like millions of years ago. Now it's just like, we dated once.
Okay. I'm just going to say okay.
Sure, why not?
Sure. That's a thing now. Why not?
Odin dated the Phoenix Force, everybody. There you go.
Yeah, okay. Like, where do you even take her?
I know,
right? Where it hasn't been yet. Like, how do you impress that?
She is the fiery force of creation, which means she's probably never satisfied.
Yeah, right? Yeah, seen it. Done it. Oh, yeah, no, that's cute. We could do that. Like...
Although, again, they do seem to be setting up this idea that the sentient storm inside Mjolnir, because Mjolnir is alive now, that's the new thing that they're putting in there. They kind of made it sound like Mjolnir is the antithesis of the Phoenix, that it's like the cooling, destructive storm versus the fiery heat of creation. And that's why they kind of have this thing going on. It's like an opposites attract deal.
Sure. Like, in Final Fantasy, it's taught me that those are not the two elements that you use against one another. It's thunder and rain. It's water. Those two are not with one another, necessarily.
It's true. It's breaking all the RPG rules.
I don't know what to do with this information. I don't know. I honestly don't know what to do with this information. All I know is I do want to read that Avengers BC or whatever it is. Like, I know I want to read that, and now I'm like, oh...
How did this happen?
I don't know. All right, well, I guess we'll find out. Maybe it'll be amazing.
Maybe it will be. I mean, I trust Aaron, and he was just kind of like, yeah, bet you want to see how this happened, don't you?
I'm telling
you,
that is not my thought process, Mr. Aaron. That's not where my brain went. My brain went to the logistics of it. I'm not going to lie.
The final page of this issue is literally like young man Odin just totally making out with fire. He's getting right in there, too. Gonna need some serious protection for that outing. I'm not sure.
And,
what would
any
even
one
work.
Of his three wives are just in the other room.
Yeah, just tapping their foot.
I was thinking they're just drinking, just acting like, nope, it's totally fine. It's all fine. It's totally fine.
Well, I think the idea is that, you know, it's not like they kept up the relationship. It's when they were young. So it's like, for all we know, the Phoenix was his first love. Aww.
No.
Just no. No. Just nah.
Nah. Nah.
We will see.
So, all right. I'm still going to read Generations Thor. It's just, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
I will admit it comes right the fuck out of left field.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
No. No, clearly young Jean or time-displaced Jean Grey needs to go and talk to Odin about the... Okay. There's a spider on the wall.
Oh, no. Is it a radioactive spider?
I don't know, but it's coming this way.
Oh, no.
And that's a perfect segue into our next book, Spectacular Spider-Man, whilst I worry about killing this thing.
Actual spiders.
Go ahead.
So, hey, along came a spider, right?
Yeah.
And continuing where we left off, Peter is trying to track down the untraceable Stark phones because that's the kind of week he's having. Well, his super spy, sister not sister, is crashing with him because she's on the run from like a black ops branch of the government who doesn't want her whistleblowing on all their surveillance they've been having on the superhero community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, average day in the life of Spider-Man. What's funny, though, like, they got a good laugh out of me right away. Remember in the last issue, Johnny Storm joked, oh, don't worry, you know, your sister's asleep at your place. Karnak is watching her. And we're like, oh, what a funny joke. Karnak wouldn't do that. That's hilarious that he said Karnak is watching her. We open up this issue, Karnak is literally sitting there watching her.
Well, he's very literal. Okay, you keep talking. If I seriously don't deal with this, I'm going to be not useful to anybody. So I'll be right back. You talk to everybody.
I'll talk to the people. And again, Karnak just kind of spins it too, where it's like, you know, meh, seemed like something to do. I was bored. You know, I could kill you in 100 different ways, right? Cool. We cool. So yeah, Johnny and Pete come back. They feel that they've finally gotten, they finally, oh, it's so funny talking to no one. Well, I'm not talking to no one. I'm talking to the fans right now. But yeah, so they feel that they got some good info regarding the Stark phones that Ironheart had given them. They believe that Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin, is at the center of this conspiracy. And you're just putting your headphones in back now.
Hi, we're good. It's dead.
The spider problem has been dealt with.
Oh, let me tell you, it was like yay, babe, but it was one of those like jumpy ones, and like it was waiting in a corner of the wall.
Yikes.
And now it's dead. We're here.
Sent out your own spider slayers to deal with it.
I sure did. It was me.
Oh man, Alistair Smythe's newest creation, Tiffany.
That's right. I gotta tell you, I left the body, and it's a warning to all other spiders.
Just put it up on a little toothpick and let that be a message to all you other spiders.
Stay out of here. That's right.
But yeah, so this is Peter and the Human Torch and Teresa, their new friend, who they decide, well, if you're going to help us fight the Kingpin, you're going to need some superhero gear, though. So they take her to Mason, the brother of the Tinkerer, and he's like, well, I don't really have anything unique in stock, but here's a couple laser guns, and here's some Falcon wings that I was working on, their last year's model, and here's a cool leather jacket. So there you go, your superhero starter kit.
Well, that's nice, right?
I mean, she pulls it off, although what bugged me about it, and it was fine later because it was actually part of the bigger story, she didn't choose to put a mask on. I'm like, look, how cheap is a domino mask? Stop by the dollar store and just get, like, a little bandit mask to protect your identity.
Right, exactly.
They don't do that, and later Kingpin recognizes her and is like, hey, don't I know you from that family business storyline? And she's like, oh, crap. The Kingpin remembered me. Damn his memory. And his eyes to look. It's funny, too, because, you know, Spider-Man and Human Torch totally bust into Fisk's office. And they're like, oh, yeah, you can't take us, man. You know, I'm the Amazing Spider-Man. And here's the Human Torch, you know, a cosmic-level fighter who's battled aliens and Galactus and everything. You're just a gang boss. You got nothing on us, man. And he's like, well, one, I'm a legitimate businessman now, if you read my miniseries. Two, you just broke into my office, so I could easily just call the cops on you right now. Did you think about that?
Exactly. Oh, hang on real quick. I want to say thank you so much to Heartless Fang for your super chat. He says, Tiff returns from her herring battle with the spider. Trust me, that was not fun. It was in the corner. I was like, because it was in the corner, and I had, like, the shoe was too big, and so I ended up hitting it, and then I hit it with a picture frame, and then it started to run away. It was not good. It was running at me. I killed it, though. It is
heart
dead now.
Punch for heart spang.
That's right.
And what follows is the Kingpin being like, look, you guys think you're tough, but like, here's the thing. I've prepared for this eventuality. Oh, you're the Human Torch, huh? You're fire? Turn on the sprinklers. Try and do that now. I turned on the sprinklers in here. So Johnny can't flame on. Oh, you got a new untrained superhero woman here? Hey, security, get her while I deal with Spider-Man. And apparently he has, like, all this holographic tech set up in his office, so Spider-Man just keeps punching kingpins that aren't there.
Okay.
So they really bit off more than they could chew in this situation.
Fair enough, okay.
Apparently he was super ready. And then eventually when the information drops that all they're after is, like, the Stark phones, Fisk is like, whoa, you're after the untraceable Stark phones? Okay, funny story about that. Yes, I'm involved. I did put the money backing into it, but my backing of this was completely legal, actually, and above board. It's like a Kickstarter. I basically just gave a bunch of money to a Kickstarter. Who you want, though, is the Tinkerer. And tell you what, he's coming to the office in a minute. Go mess with him. So he just throws the Tinkerer under the bus. It's amazing, while also threatening and insinuating to both Peter and Teresa, where it's like, yeah, we had that whole thing during family business. My memory's a little hazy about Peter Parker's true identity, but it could always get unhazy.
Okay.
Implying that he either knows or could possibly know in the future that Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Okay, gotcha.
Which, that's never good. I mean, heck, he knows, he knew Matt Murdock was Daredevil, and you saw how he made his life hell for many years.
Yeah. But I guess it'll depend on his, like, his ongoing, where it's like, you know, he wants to be, like, this whole, like, him wanting to be mayor, like, good, but, mm-hmm. like, that's not gonna last for very long, I'm sure, because, like, that can only be entertaining for so long, and that's very much what Lex Luthor's doing anyway, right now.
Yeah, and he's being evil in the Daredevil book, too, but not, like, in-your-face evil. He's being evil from the background, where he's, like, trying to mess with Matt Murdock's court cases, because he's like, man, you know, if this gets pushed through, this could be really bad for me and my operation. So I'm going to let my underlings handle this, but I'm not going to actually get involved. I'm going to fight him out in the courtroom. I'm going to fight it out legit, basically. And so, yeah, that's basically the story. The big takeaway from it is that apparently the spies who have been following Teresa grabbed a picture of her and Spider-Man entering the office illegally, and they sent that off to J. Jonah Jameson, being like, hey, we know you got the weirdest boner for Spider-Man, so here's Spider-Man conspiring with, a known whistleblower and fact stealer and all the enemy of the state right there. Can you make something happen with this, J. Jonah? And he's like, oh, you bet I can. Can you build us up a hit piece right quick? And it's like, I'm already working on it.
Well, I know that initially Sal was like one of those people. He was like, he appreciated this whole series, but he wasn't 100% on board. But I think he's been enjoying it a little bit more as of late.
It's fun.
Yeah, I think he's getting into a little bit more of the groove. I'm not saying he's saying it's one of his favorites ever, but I think it's something that he's just like, okay, yeah, this is better than I thought it was going to be.
It's a fun counterpoint to what Slott's doing in the main Spider-Man book.
Right.
I like that the stakes are ultimately pretty low for a lot of the time. And even the threatening villains are kind of like, whoa, really? That's what you wanted? Okay, well, dude, we could just talk about this. Didn't have to come in here and ruin my art when I turned all my sprinklers on and shit. Jeez, I'm going to bill the shit out of you guys for that.
Fair enough. So, I mean, overall, are you digging how this book's going so far?
Yeah, I think this is kind of like the awkward middle child of the arc. I would think the two ones that preceded it were stronger, but that's just kind of because, hey, it's got to, like, do more heavy lifting than anything else.
Okay, that's fair. All right, you know what? Just hanging out here this week in Marvel, Doctor Strange came out this week, still written by Dennis Hopeless. We're still in a tie-in, but we're finally done. We're finally finished with the tie-in.
It's all an Italian snake eater.
Like, this has just been a tie-in arc, which I've never really experienced before for me. So, like, this has been interesting, and I know part of it was just where Aaron's run end, where this fell, and then where the next writer was going to take over. I know a lot of people, like, for them, they've really been digging Dennis Hopeless' version of this. For me, it hasn't. It's just not for me, and, like, that's okay.
Right.
Because, you know, just because, like, I'm not a fan of it doesn't mean you can't be a fan of it. It just means that I was just kind of waiting for this to be completed, essentially. I know that in the last Secret Empire, Strange supposedly traded his house in for, you know, essentially, like, a spell, which may or may not have actually gone through. I know I had a little bit of a freak out about that. And then someone, like, tweeted at me an image of him leaving the house and Loki being in there.
Oh.
So it seems like that's exactly what happened, everybody.
Loki is going to be the villain of the first, like, legacy arc.
No, I know, but it seems like he has given up the Sanctum. And, like, I am not cool with that being in there, because this book doesn't mention it at all.
Well, now it gives him something to work forward to. He's got to get his house back.
I know, but for me, it's like the fact that it happened in Secret Empire and not in Doctor Strange. You know what I mean? Or Doctor Strange doesn't even back it up necessarily. Like,
yeah, this it book, feels like he should say something about it.
You would think so. This book is literally just the end fight. Like, it's just him and Jess, Spider-Woman, Kingpin, and Ben Urich. Like going after Baron Mordo, and it's all about like ruses and faking people out, and just, you know, Strange not actually having much power, but just getting the drop on Baron Mordo. Like essentially, it's just like, hey, it's a classic magic trick. Essentially, it's like it's just all about diversion. Like it's just like
Kansas City Shuffle.
Exactly. Like look at the pretty lady over here while I'm doing something over there. And Baron Mordo thinks that he sees through it and eventually like attacks Strange directly, but it doesn't work. And like, you know, Baron Mordo's convinced that he must have more power than he was letting on. But then, as it turns out, it has nothing to do with that. It's just that he was astral projecting himself. And so, like, what he's attacking is an astral projection. He was actually hidden in the plane that Spider-Woman is flying. And so, like, he gets into the Sanctum and convinces Baron Mordo to leave it. And upon doing so, they seemingly make it out to be that once he's done that, Strange can kind of tap into the power of the Sanctum and, like, remove some of Mordo's strength from there, and he frees all of his allies, and then they all kind of beat the crap out of Mordo. But like they're like, oh, but the dome didn't break because like, and he's just like, yeah, I know. Mordo was never really in charge. It's, you know, it's not like he was just kind of running things in here, but he's not the one who made the dome.
No.
And then literally the end is like he goes inside, and they're like, oh, you're gonna go like into the library and like tap some of that energy and like get rid of like whatever, like the dome or whatever. You're gonna go get ready or what have you. And he goes and takes a bath. And he just leaves them all out there. And I was like, what?
There's kind of pressing concerns.
Yeah.
Like, you've been under this dome for a year.
Exactly. So, like, it was just very bizarre, like, the ending to this. Like, just like, no, it's cool. And now I will take a bath. And I guess in the other book, I then make a deal and sell that. You know what I mean? Like,
I can only assume what happened in the main Secret Empire book happened after this.
Oh, I'm sure it did. I 100% agree, but then at the very least, Hopeless should have set it up where he's going to make the deal. Like, that's where he goes into the house.
He goes to the library, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's just like, all right, I'm gonna make the deal. Because then at least, like, you solidify that it did occur. And, like, here's the thing. Like, I kind of assume that the next issue we see will be the next writer. I could be wrong about that because
I think that's how it works.
I didn't get a chance to really look this up yet. I don't know. Like they, I personally feel like if you're going to do a tie-in for this long, that means that you must be kind of like looped into what's occurring. So like, how did you not end this book?
It's funny to think Deadpool ties in much better to the actual events of Secret Empire than Doctor Strange does.
Right. Right. I mean, like, look, they kept it with the dome. They kept with the characters under the dome. Like, I totally get it. But, like, just, like, and it was just such a bizarre ending.
Mm.
Like, you know, without it actually ending, you know? Like, yes, technically this arc is over, but, like, you solved the problem of Baron Mordo, and you got your house back only to then sell it off.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, just bizarre. And I know, look, it has to fit in with a very specific amount of time. It has to fit in within, like, the events that are going on. So, like, yeah, they put the writer in a box, and they're like, just keep within these constraints. That's all you can do.
Should have had a little bit more connective tissue.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe just a little bit for me. You know, I am glad that the series has kept going and that we will see a new writer come to it, because that was my fear, is that Aaron would leave and we'd be in this, like, flux period where, like, the book's, like, sales would tank and then that would be the end of it. So, like, this is one of those things where I was like, well, I will keep buying it and I'm going to keep reading because I do want to know what's been going on and I want to make sure I understand everything that's happening. But, you know, this hasn't been my favorite. It has not been my favorite.
No.
But, you know, I'm excited for the future because, as we all know, I'm a huge fan of Donny Cates now.
It's like you willed that into existence or something.
I think, yeah, I know, right? Well, actually, I made a deal and I sold my house. I have to actually leave in the next few minutes.
She sold the comic pop studio to the librarians.
I did. It's okay. It's okay.
They're going to cut it up and make it into condos.
Yeah, it'll work out in the end. It's fine. But I got my book, so it better be good. anyway, so you go, guys. That was Doctor Strange. For me, this was not like a must pick up. But if you've been reading Doctor Strange and you enjoy Dennis Hopeless, then I would definitely say you should pick this up. Like, if this is something that's been interesting you, yeah, go for it. Absolutely. It's just not for me. So, there you go. Here's a book that's sitting in my cart that's coming up, that I again, you know, like my brain not functioning aside, I was going to read it. But I'm glad that Joel did, and that's Nightwing New World Order.
Yes.
I was really, like, when I read the little preview for that, that sounded super interesting. I bought it. Hilariously enough, Sal also bought it, which we try not to, like, buy too much crossover. But I was like, oops, oh well. So now we have many copies of this book. But I was excited, and again, I'm going to read it once everything kind of settles up here. But tell me about it now.
Yeah, so Dick Grayson joins Hall and Nash in the New World Order stable, and that's a wrestling joke, everybody. Some people will get that, other people won't.
I will not.
I had to get that in there just once. But no, so yeah, the deal about this New World Order book is that it's an Elseworlds book. It's the first official Elseworlds book in a very, very long time at DC. It's also the triumphant return of Kyle Higgins, a man who wrote Nightwing at the beginning of the New 52, was very much involved in the Bat family of books, and also was not afraid to say once he left that the regime at DC at that time really kneecapped him in his ideas, and he left that book feeling very, very unfulfilled. He since went on to do some movies, he did some very highly regarded indie series, and now he's back under a new regime, just another one of the many Geoff Johns repairing broken bridges.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so this book actually has a fair amount going on even outside the book itself. It opens on a hell of a shot. Metropolis is destroyed and Superman is dead. Mm-hmm. And Nightwing is standing over him with some sort of sci-fi goo-ga saying, you know, I'm sorry it had to come to this, Clark. You know, I'm sorry it all had to be this way. And then we jump ahead to the year 2028.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably one of the biggest
times.
Probably one of the biggest time jumps I've ever seen. We join up with old man Dick Grayson, and I was just able to say the words old man Dick on the show, and no one laughed.
No, well, it's just me. I normally might have laughed, maybe.
man, on my channel, I made two old man jokes in, like, my thumbnails, because, like, Damien was old in the Titans book, and then, like, you know, we had old man Grace, and I'm like, is it tacky if I use the same old man joke twice? Not for me, it's not. So, yes, we've got Silver Fox Dick Grayson in the future, heading up a totalitarian police force modeled after Batman called the Crusaders.
Okay.
And their deal is they are hunting down anyone with metahuman powers. Apparently, after the Metropolis incident, a bunch of people with metahuman powers died. Most of the well-known superheroes died. Superman is dead. Batman is dead.
Okay.
And anyone who still remains with metahuman powers is forced by the government to take medication to inhibit their powers. Like, as the issue opens up, we see them chasing down Dr. Light, who's gone off his meds.
Okay. Hang on, just real quick. Just because someone else will say it, definitely. Technically, Batman doesn't have metahuman powers.
He's
just really cool.
But he died some other way. He's not around anymore. And
right.
It's funny. I don't know if this... Did you ever see that Christian Bale movie, Equilibrium?
Yes, of course I did, with Gunkata.
Hell yeah, the Grammaton clerics. That's basically what this is what this comes down to. You only swap out emotions for metahumans and the Grammaton clerics for crusaders, and you basically have Nightwing the New Order.
All right.
Not a bad pitch.
Fine.
Yeah, it's a fine pitch. Dick Grayson is kind of like ingratiated himself as like the head of this New World Order, and everyone's looking to him and being like, oh, you know, Dick Grayson, you make us all feel so good and safe. We don't have to worry anymore. And he's kind of like this big celebrity now because, you know, he's taken it to those metahumans. He's also a single father.
Oh.
He has a son, Jake.
By whom?
And that's mystery, isn't it? That's the stinger, in fact, of this issue. It's Alfred is still alive, actually.
Good for him.
Alfred is hanging out. He lives in Arizona now. He doesn't live in Gotham anymore, but he stopped by to have dinner with Dick and his son Jake, because apparently he's also like the curator of the Batman Museum in Gotham.
Oh.
And they needed him to like sign some papers and everything before he went back.
Do people know who Batman was? Like, do they know his identity?
That's a damn good question. They have a museum dedicated to him, so I mean.
Right? And like, you have Alfred Pennyworth, who was just suddenly like, I trust me, I have a huge fascination with Batman, for
Yeah,
no
it's like
reason. For
if he was
no.
his butler. Well, it's like also here's the thing too. I think they know he's Nightwing because his son knows he's Nightwing. He has Nightwing posters in his wall. So yeah, I think secret identities are out the door in this
That's
new world order.
kind of cute.
Yeah,
Like, he has
little bit.
posters of his dad. He's like, my dad is cool. He hunts down people who used to save us and then tells them they can't save us anymore.
Well, here's the thing, actually. Jake is getting bullied at school by the nephew of Arthur Light, who's like, "Yeah, your dad's goon squad dragged my uncle away in the night just because he refused to take the government medication."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Daddy, are you the bad guy? Are you doing bad things?" And Dick's like, "Oh no, what a disarming question. I've done lots of things I'm not proud of, son, but Metropolis changed everything, and I'm just, trying to do for the greater good." And
Dick's
Alfred
like,
just.
see previous costumes of mine.
Yes, yeah, see my previous costume. Oh man, disco collar, what?
Yeah, I was not proud of myself then.
Red, why were you wearing red? We were all wearing red at that era. It was really stupid. We looked like bad guys. Unlike now, but yeah. And yeah, Alfred disagrees with him too, and they have like a very impassioned argument over dinner where it's like, "Dick, I still think of you as a son, I love and care about you and everything, but I disagree with many of the things you've done, including how you're policing the world and Gotham City now, and also what happened with Jake's mom." And that leads us into our final bit there, where Dick is apparently some mysterious figure who is implied to possibly be Wally West is going around destroying the factories that are making the power inhibiting drugs.
Okay.
And that's like, "Oh, I gotta catch this person. They could threaten the New World Order." And then he gets a call from his kid's school saying, "You should really come here. This is really important. We made every attempt to keep this nice and quiet. We wanted to bring this to you directly. His son has superpowers
Yeah,
now."
okay.
And his superpowers, he's got like these lasery eye things that makes like a very Starfire-esque symbol on his face. And I'm like, "Oh, is he not just meta? Is he half alien too?"
Well, good for them. As much as I love like the Dick and Barbara relationship, I've always loved that. At least in the cartoon, I always loved the
Yeah.
Starfire and Robin relationship quite a
I
bit.
think Higgins has always been more of a fan of the
Is he
Starfire Dick
orange at
relationship.
all?
No. Now, he took after his father in that regard. He's not bright orange.
Which means that one day Dick will have to worry about his son's fabulous ass.
That's right. That's
That's gonna
always the thing. Now, look, son, it's the
be
family curse of the Graysons,
it's
you
gonna
see.
be the big dad worry right there. He's just like, no, son, they only care about you because of your butt.
It's one of our dearest powers, but you must use that power only for good.
Exactly. You have to wear a lot of long coats.
Is what you have to do. It's funny too, old Nightwing, he's like distinguished, he's an older guy now, but he's still got like the long hair. He looks like a college professor.
Okay.
That's the look he's rocking now in the future. But yeah, that's the setup for this 6-issue miniseries. And I gotta say, cool setup. I'm interested in where they're going with this.
Yeah, I'm telling you, honestly, like when I read that, like I did not realize it was an Elseworlds book.
That's a good show.
Right? That is a good show. You guys should check that out on Wednesdays. But I didn't realize it was an Elseworlds book. I just again not was not paying attention as I added it to my cart. But like made sense that
The
it was.
first Elseworlds in a long time, and it feels like a good old-fashioned DC Elseworlds. It reminded me of Gotham by Gaslight and Speeding Bullets and all these other ones where it's like, hey, you know the heroes, you know their setting. Let's move it around a bit. Let's do some
Right.
cool shit and see what happens.
That's interesting. And like honestly, like kind of a fun way to go with this. I mean, like obviously, like the Batman just overall mythology is not like afraid of going into the future, like see Batman Beyond, see
Yeah.
Dark Knight. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have dealt with this sort of concept, like an end to heroes, counterculture, that kind of thing. It's just interesting to see this character taking it on, and especially from another side of the law, so.
Yeah, I think the same way, you know, it's so compelling to make Dick the head of this totalitarian government is much in the same way it was compelling to make Steve Rogers the head of his totalitarian government, and that is they are the beloved everyman character is what they are. There is a purity to Steve and to Dick Grayson, and the idea to be like, what could possibly have caused them to stray so far from their key ideology and beliefs?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. So, but the smart thing here, making an Elseworlds book where they can just explore the idea without having to necessarily forever change a character.
And put the genie back in the bottle when it's all done, essentially.
Exactly. So that's really
as much cool. As I like Secret Empire, that's true. It's like, you're going to have a hell of a time putting this all back together.
Right, exactly. So, all right, well, actually, that's a pretty good transition into our final book, which is, of course, Secret Empire number 9.
Yep. The penultimate issue.
The penultimate issue. So yeah, you've been doing a phenomenal job covering this.
Thank you.
I did actually read this, so I can chime in here and there, but let's go for it.
Yeah. So after the previous issue, the heroes all collectively got their heads out of their asses and said, you know what? Maybe instead of fighting, we should just end up saving people. Oh wait, saving people worked? Holy crap, we're actually winning now. And it's basically like it makes me think like that moment in the war documentary where it's like, you know, and the Avengers resistance pushed forward through Poland in, you know, the year 2017.
Yep.
Although I guess we're technically in 2018 because they say a year passed in the time we've been under the dome. But hey, whatever. So the heroes are winning, and because the heroes are winning, Steve Rogers is getting even more desperate to complete the Cosmic Cube to bring about his perfect world, to rewrite everyone the way he had been rewritten.
Right.
And he brings T'Challa to, like, the Capitol in chains and everything, and T'Challa's like, nah, man, it's not a good look for me. When I break these chains, I'm coming for both of you.
Right, exactly. T'Challa's not, it's not having any of this.
And Zemo's being like your typical dickbag jailer. He's like kicking him while he's down and pushing him and stuff, and T'Challa's just like, I'm gonna make you regret every one of those.
Yeah.
When I am out of here. So they get his shard. They meet the mutant delegation from New Tyon of Emma Frost and everyone else. And they're like, you know, okay, so look, we're willing to give you our shard, but only on the condition that, you know, the mutants will be spared and, you know, we'll be able to live in peace. And Steve's like, look, I'll say to you what I said to Magneto. This alliance was never going to be permanent. We were always going to scapegoat you one way or the other. Give it to me, and I'm still going to kill you. And Emma's like, you know, I thought about that, and you're already losing a bunch out there, and we're really powerful, and you invited us into your house. So, hey, Magneto, get him! And Magneto just brings down all of the destroyer ships just single-handedly.
Yep.
And it's awesome.
It is awesome. Like, that's the, like, say what you will about Magneto. I mean, like, I think most people do like him as a character, but man, you can create spectacular images with him as a character.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great costume. His power really lends itself to, like, art in general. Like, it's just, God, it's just, you can just do so much amazing work with him.
Now, I haven't been reading the X-Men Blue tie-ins. Where has Magneto been this whole time? Because they set it up that he was going to be the leader of New Tyon.
Right.
But then Emma Frost kind of superseded him and set up a puppet government with Zorn.
Right.
What was up with that?
I'm a little behind on that myself, so like maybe the chat knows, but honestly, like with the way some of these books have been going, like you have no idea when anything's taking place, honestly.
It's true. Like what I had gleaned from it was Magneto's like, nah, this is a stupid idea. I say no. Emma's like, hey, what is it? Dark Avengers Council and Cabal and everything else I've been on. I will be your morally compromised leader.
Right, exactly. Yeah, she's
I have
fine with
no
that.
Problem.
Yeah, honestly, I got you know, no problems. What amazed me the most in this was like how clothed she was.
Yeah, well, because it was a fancy affair.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
It's cold in DC that time of year.
Exactly. I was just like, wow, look at you.
And once the good guys start winning fights all over the place, bad guy turncoats start turncoating the other way, which I love in a total, they'll do it with you, they'll do it to you, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Because Black Ant and Taskmaster, who have basically been like the Beavis and Butthead, Bulk and Skull of this event so far, they're like, huh, so good guys are winning, huh? What should we do about this? I guess we could let the champions out. Yeah, let's let the champions out. Hey, kids.
Right, but after having that conversation with some of the, like, was great. I mean, like, it was so random, but, like, it was just, like, a great little bit of business, like, about how he had, like, a relationship with a woman, and, like, we're looking at apartments. I can't just give that up.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, good for you.
It's a rough time, man. You know, he's really grown the, what is it, the LMD that is Black Ant. Because that's not the real guy. That's an LMD version of him.
Yeah, but still, like, I here is what I wished from this series was more... I'm sorry, I was reading comments as we were talking. My apologies.
All right.
But that we had more, like, mini character building moments like that. Like, regardless of, like, real or not, like, in a few sentences, I got a lot of information about this character.
It was wonderful. And it completes their arc, too, because here's the thing. Taskmaster and Black Ant found out about Captain America being a Hydra sleeper agent before anybody else. They were going to sell that information to Maria Hill when Hydra crashed the deal. So these two could have saved the day very early on if they wanted to. They chose not to because they only care about self-interest and they're the ultimate freelancers and everything. And even their, like, their chaotic neutrality ends up helping everyone around them.
Right, exactly. They can't help themselves.
Because they have no morality of their own. And I love they let the champions go. And they're like, okay, kids, we're going to let you join the fight now. But in exchange, you're going to tell the Avengers we were good to you, right? We let you watch TV and gave you steak and shake, right? So we're not going to get tried as Nazi war criminals when all of this is said and done, right? We're not going to get hung as traitors to the United States, right. Huh? Right, kids? Right?
Yeah, and they're like examples of, like, what makes them, like, worthy to not have that happen was hilarious. Like, we let you watch TV, and we brought you fast food.
Yeah.
Don't forget that. And then we let you out. Not just and we let you out. Very specifically those other things.
And once the champions join the fray, the domino effect is started and it keeps going. Viv is able to get the virus out of her father, the Vision, which means he gets brought back to himself. Doctor Strange is able to open up a portal and summon back Jane Foster Thor from wherever she was stuck, which means she can get her hammer back.
Yep.
That also means it's a great moment for Doctor Strange where it's like, okay, big Lord of the Rings style fight happening all around us. Time to have an exorcism on the Scarlet Witch.
Exactly, exactly. I was like, all right, cool, right on. I mean, like, sure. At this point, like, I have no idea what...
Someone watch my back, I got a demon to banish.
Well, yeah, but I'm like, also, like, at this point, I have zero idea what he's capable of doing in books any longer, so...
Yeah, Nick Spencer's just like, he's Doctor Strange. He can do it because he's Doctor Strange.
I need him to be Doctor Strange right now. I need him to not have to deal with what Jason Aaron left him with, okay? Fine, whatever. Now he's doing this. Shut up, Tiffany.
He can do it because he can, because the story needs it.
Yeah, so...
But yes, so the good guys start winning all over the place. The Secret Empire is crumbling all around Steve's ears. And it's Zola who says, well, look, here's the thing. We still have a fair amount of these shards. I could put them together for you in a sick-ass Hydra war suit that looks a lot like your mech suit that you wore a couple times.
Yeah, that was kind of, like, for me, I was like, is it a really good idea to put a not completed, whatchamacallit, like, cube in someone's chest, which immediately made me think of Transformers.
It's fine.
Are you sure? Because, like, it seems like you need that thing to be, like...
stable.
Just, I don't know, maybe that's just me. I don't deal with a lot of cosmic cubes, so...
Stevie's got this. It's fine.
Well, okay.
and we get this feeling where it's like, look, you've won all these battles, you've taken back all this territory, but the Secret Empire will never be defeated until you defeat the man itself, until you defeat Steve.
Right. And then we see essentially, like, the... Like, this is just so funny, because, like, again, we see someone putting the heroes together, like we saw in Monsters Unleashed, where it was, like, everybody went ahead to and fought together. It didn't matter what they were from, like, you know, whatever, where they were from, everyone was fighting for one cause, and we see Spencer do the same thing here, everyone coming together from all over, fighting for this one very specific cause. But at the end of the day, it seems like that's, like, will only serve as a diversion for... the true defeat, which is via Kobik, I suppose, which to me it's like, I get
maybe.
It because, like, that's kind of the catalyst for everything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it
all roads lead back to her.
Everything that's been happening.
Well, here's the thing. Like, again, we learned the big thing about Dream Steve this issue, and that is that, well, he is actually just that. He only exists within the memories of Kobik.
Right.
He's not even really a real boy. And he asked the question, but it's like, but Kobik, you're an all-powerful godchild. You can put me back, right? You can make me the real Steve and make that guy not Steve anymore. And she's like, I don't know what I can do anymore.
Right, and she seems to be afraid.
Yeah, because everything she's done has gone so horribly wrong every time.
Yeah, but like, I mean, like, and again, like, I understand, like, you have to, like, you know, like, certain, like, powers have to cancel out other powers, but, like, it's like, what was the point of this whole journey then, if that's how, like, and again, I have no idea, honestly, if that's how they're gonna fix it or reset this whole thing, like, but, like, for me, it's like, what was the point of that? We just needed, like, that version of Steve's journey then. Like, that was the important part at the end of the day.
I'm sure we'll see a fusion at some point. But again, it's like, you know, Kobik has been proven to be a very unreliable narrator because she's a toddler. That's why.
I mean, well, I think she's a little older than a toddler. Most toddlers can't form sentences quite like she can. But that's yeah. No, she is childlike. But I mean, again, like, we'll see. Like, we're like, it all wrap up in theory, except for the Omega issue. But like, in theory, the main bulk of the story should wrap up in the next issue, so it'll really just come down to what they decide to do. Will it be Kobik who just, like, it's just like, nah, fixed it, whatever, and then, for me, it's just gonna come down to, then why did I go on the journey with the other characters?
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter.
I mean, at the end of the day, Secret Empire is a Captain America story, because it was born of the Cap book.
It's true, but, like, then why do we spend so much time away from Cap in either place? Like, if it really is a Captain America story, we should have spent more time with both of them and less with the others. Unless, like, I you know what it is? I can't figure out where this is going right now, so we'll see what happens. I don't want to get too, like, riled up about something when I don't know how they're going to end it, but right now I'm just kind of questioning a little bit as to, like, okay, was this all worth it?
Yeah, I've been enjoying the book. I've been trusting Spencer's direction. I think he'll land on his feet or come close to it. I mean, here's the thing. Dug Secret Empire way more than I dug the last couple Marvel events. That goes without saying.
Well, I mean, I liked Monsters Unleashed, but that was just me, pretty much.
Well, the difference was you read that one.
I did.
I liked hearing you talk about Monsters Unleashed. You sold it pretty hard.
Right? Well, I just, like, I apparently like monsters and people fighting monsters and monsters fighting other monsters. But in terms of, like, big, like, earth-shattering events, like Civil War II was and this was, I understand what you're saying, absolutely.
And even, like, Inhumans versus X-Men or any of that.
Yeah, I can't forget that.
Or Apocalypse War or any of that other stuff.
Can't forget those, too. But there you go, guys. That was Secret Empire number 9. I can't believe we're almost done with this. And honestly,
they didn't miss an issue for all our talk of, like, oh, you know, they bungled the release of all these. They did not bungle the release of this one.
They really didn't. The only thing they did was they extended it, which, of course, throws into chaos a lot of other things. So, you know, we'll see, like, where the chips may lie. But, like, at the end of the day, I am shocked that we're almost at the end of this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it seemed like it would never come to this point. It seemed like they were either going to keep extending it or just would never get here. But we're almost here, guys.
We're almost here.
And then we'll see what happens after that. Like, we'll find out just how much Marvel changes and or stays the same in the wake of this and in the coming books that are going to be released in the near future. So,
yeah.
You know, but again, guys, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. That's pretty much it. That was our list. Again, sorry for my kind of low energy today. But I'll have a whole, like, over a week essentially to get myself back together. Because don't forget, we will not be here next week. Joel will be away.
Yes.
He'll be having an awesome time at Fan Expo.
Yep, Fan Expo Toronto. You got it.
Thank you.
The 31st to the 3rd, I will be there.
I seriously...
And there will be fun and games and special guests.
Exactly. But for a second, I was like, is that what it's called? Is that... I was like almost 100% that that's what it was. So if you guys are in the area and you're going to Fan Expo, be on the lookout for that guy right over there, because he will be floating around the con. He'll be happy to say hello to you. He might even take a picture with you. Who knows?
I always
talk
do.
For Joel.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You're a good hype woman for me.
But yeah, be on the lookout. I'm sure he'll tweet things out as to where he is, what he's doing, what's going on with all
of
that.
I'm
going to
actually try and keep up my my social media world. I'm terrible at doing that when I go to cons. I get so frazzled. I'm like, got to tweet about a thing. And then people are like, you were there? Yeah, I was there all day.
Exactly. No, I hear you. But if you want to find more of it, Joel, head on over to his Twitter. It's at Cape Joel. He'll keep you updated as to what's going on with him, Fan Expo, and all the stuff he's doing for himself. If you want to hang out with me over on Twitter at The Real Zoobs, right there, it's down there. You can come on by and do that. And I know we haven't really been plugging a lot of our own stuff, but I'm going to do one very shameless one and just honestly say thank you so much to everyone who supported a very, like, sort of random style of back issues over on Comic Pop. We don't cover too much indie beyond Saga usually, and we took a shot in the dark with Sandman, especially with what happened in DC Metal. It's something that I finally felt that we maybe had a chance at making it worthwhile.
No time like the present.
Or anything like that. Like, honestly, you guys have been amazing. And just so supportive of it. And like, if we just get any new readers to that book, and to make sure that we have you know, just a lot of support for it, like, it's totally worth it to me. So thank you guys so much for that support. And that's it. Don't forget to come back on Tuesdays for the weekly poll. That's over on Eligible Monster on Twitch. And, you know, just hang out, talk about comic book news and all that stuff. Maybe the Defenders this week. I'm not sure. I know there was, like, everyone wanted to kind of hold off on that because they realized it had just come out on that Friday and not everybody had a chance to finish it off. And the spoiler cast might have been too spoilery for folk. But don't forget to go over there. And like I said, we will be gone next week. But don't forget to read comics and hang out. And we'll catch you guys, well, at least on the poll, in 2 weeks. We'll see you then, guys. Have a good one. Have a good weekend. And we'll see you guys later. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.